Blackstone Audio presents Cyber Spies, the secret history of surveillance, hacking, and digital espionage by Gordon Carrera. This book is read by Gildert Jackson. For Jane, Joseph, and Samuel. Preface to the American edition. The computer was born to spy. The first computer was created in secret to aid intelligence work, but all computers, and especially networked computers, are uniquely useful for, and vulnerable to, espionage. The speed and ingenuity of technological innovation has often blinded us to understanding this historical truth and its implications. Many books have been written about the emergence of cyber espionage in recent years, but this book is about something broader. It aims to weave together related stories like encryption and code breaking, the rise of the computer industry and its complex relationship with the secret world, and relate these to the emergence of what was first called computer security, now cyber security, and with it, the rise of cyber espionage. Much of what people today discuss as if it is new, big data, cyber security, and going dark thanks to encryption, to take three examples, is in fact decades old, and only an understanding of the history can illuminate what really is novel. This is a book that explores that history in the context of the important relationship between Britain and America. Britain played a key role in pioneering computing, thanks to Alan Turing and others in the 30s and 40s, but also in the use of bulk intelligence collection even earlier. The precedents for the kind of activity Edward Snowden revealed can be found in British as much as American history. The book also provides the most detailed account yet of the birth at Bletchley Park of the alliance between the two nations' code-breaking services. It explores how America eclipsed its partner and the rise of Silicon Valley. One reason was the huge state subsidies fed into the private sector thanks to work for the secret state, and the relationship of convenience between spies and companies that lasted until recently exposed. The focus on the international story should also aid the reader in seeing the history in a global context. In many ways, being the most advanced nation in computing has imbued the US with a peculiar mix of insecurity and assertiveness. It understood better than anyone how computers could be exploited for espionage and sabotage because it pioneered many of the techniques. It also realized how its role leading the way in computing left it dependent and vulnerable. Many nations have long worried about their dependence on American hardware and software. Now the US is also worrying about the rise of global players like Chinese telecoms giant Huawei, a company whose importance is explored in this book based on extensive original reporting. The view from China and other countries also helps put some of the issues of great concern in the US, such as intellectual property theft, into a broader perspective. Events in the last year have thrown many of the issues in the book into sharp relief, none more so than the extent to which the group called ISIS in Iraq and Syria and its supporters in the West have used technology. 5 years ago, Western spy agencies faced a threat from a group, Al-Qaeda, which used one major communications tool, email, and which was, in the most part, relatively unsophisticated. This meant it could be tracked relatively easily. Today's members of ISIS are from a new generation who have grown up with the latest technology and make use of the latest tools, which emerge at dizzying speed, driven by the desire and ingenuity of developers and the public's appetite for the new. Some ISIS operators, such as the Briton Mohammed Emwazi, also known as Jihadi John, who killed American and British hostages on video, proved adept at using advanced technology to propagandize and operate online, but also hide their tracks to make it harder to find them. It took more than a year to track Emwazi, resulting in his death in a U.S. drone strike in November 2015. Attacks in San Bernardino and Paris, as well as the extent to which ISIS uses technology more broadly to propagandize, recruit, and organize, as well as perhaps even to carry out nascent cyber attacks, has heightened the tensions between Silicon Valley and the spies, and compounded a relationship already fractured by the Edward Snowden revelations. At the same time as ISIS's use of social media has increased the state's desire to get more from companies, the companies are focusing more on privacy. ISIS and others are using American tech companies as their platforms to reach around the world, including into America itself, to encourage and support terrorism. The early signs of individuals being radicalized are also often displayed on social media. So, how far should companies be responsible for the platforms they create and the content they carry? Is monitoring social media content for threats a matter of good corporate social responsibility for companies, or is it the outsourcing of intelligence gathering to the private sector in which they spy on their users? And how do you deal with such issues when American companies increasingly operate globally? Sometimes a thorny knot of issues is presented as simply a case of requiring us to balance security with privacy, but the reality is far more complex and multi-layered. Encryption might at once offer individuals more privacy and security, but also pose challenges for law enforcement and the state in providing collective security. This book traces the story of encryption from the days of Bletchley Park through to its central role today in political debate, with a crucial meeting at Stanford in the 1970s, the pivot point from the secret world into the public eye. Does Apple's provision of end-to-end encryption for its phones help make individuals safer by protecting us from cyber criminals, or does it make the world more dangerous by giving jihadists a way to communicate out of reach of the state? The row between Apple and the FBI over the phone of the San Bernardino shooter is only the latest chapter in a longer story. One thing that the history shows is that the going dark debate in the US is not new. Britain faced it with an upgraded Enigma machine on the eve of war. Britain and America faced it in the early Cold War when the Soviets improved their systems, and they feared it again in the 70s and 90s with the spread of encryption and fiber optics. The history suggests that intelligence agencies, more so than law enforcement, are highly inventive in finding ways round obstacles which at first seem insurmountable, sometimes through high technology and sometimes through low cunning. Spies are also struggling to adapt to the new world. In recent months, the CIA has radically reorganized itself with a new directorate to focus on bringing digital intelligence into the heart of human espionage. Computers certainly offer new ways to steal data, but it also poses real challenges to spies. You could forgive the chief of MI6, known as C, a slight shudder as he watched the last Bond movie Spectre. Not the scene in which MI6 HQ is blown up, but the more worrisome plot device that his secret service was going to be swallowed up by a new data-driven super-agency. Spies know that just as they can use technology to uncover secrets, so the same technology can be used to strip away the secrecy that they consider vital to doing their job. Few outside the intelligence world understand the extent to which spies in the US and Britain perceive technology as an existential threat to their work. An arms race is on between spy services to exploit technology. Only those who adapt will survive. The fear of what could be done with data was evident in Washington's neuralgic reaction to the cyber intrusion into the federal government's Office of Personnel Management, in which the personal details and vetting material on 21 million people, many of them government workers, were stolen, allegedly by the Chinese. The material could be used to spot vulnerabilities and approach an official for blackmail. A smart intelligence service could also correlate who at any embassy, say in Beijing, was on the database, and by elimination work out that anyone not on the database might be an undercover intelligence officer. This was a great intelligence operation, one top American spy says, and given the chance, we would have done the same thing. Recent events have also suggested the NATO alliance of Western countries is behind Russia in integrating cyber into information operations and into irregular or hybrid warfare, as witnessed in Ukraine. Soon there will be no such thing as cyber spies, as it will be a given that spying will be cyber-enabled, and the same is true for cyber warfare. It will become an intrinsic part of all military doctrine. Russia appears willing to push the boundaries in live testing cyber weapons. This is one part of a notable recent proliferation and escalation of cyber attack, as well as espionage capability. The signs are that the long-standing concerns over the use of cyber techniques to cause real-world effects rather than just pilfer data are now turning into reality, whether it is knocking out power stations or interfering with live TV broadcasts. The nightmares of people maliciously manipulating health and banking data or carrying out real cyber terrorism rather than just vandalism may be about to come true. What are the implications of the rising tide of cyber espionage for all of us? What is clear is that it is becoming harder and harder to keep secrets in the modern world. Just ask the people who signed up to Ashley Madison and then had their details hacked. Or the people whose credit card information is sold on the dark web. Or the teenagers who realize their social media trail of embarrassing pictures is harder to erase than they thought. Or the 21 million people affected by the OPM breach. Or the NSA after Edward Snowden. It is now easier than ever for information to be stolen and leaked. An ever-increasing dependence on inherently insecure technology will only accelerate this trend as cars, watches, fridges, and an array of everyday items start to get hacked by a range of malicious actors. The rising toll of cyber security breaches begs the question of whether a tipping point is approaching when the insecurity undermines confidence in the much-heralded future of big data and the Internet of Things. If we do not lose our trust in technology, we may instead be forced, partly by our own commercial choices, to refashion our notions of privacy and secrecy. Companies are keen to point their finger at the state for compromising privacy, but less keen to talk about the implications of their own practices in exploiting data, while spies like to point their fingers at the companies, ignoring some of the differences. In reality, a complex symbiotic relationship exists between corporate data collection and the intelligence activities of the state. The existence of pools of data gathered for profit acts as both a tempting target for spies, but also a precedent for their actions. Europe and America are also at odds over the power of American technology companies and the implications of their dominance. Should we simply shrug our shoulders and enjoy the latest app which sucks up our data and accept the intrusions of the state as necessary in the fight against terrorism? Or should we instead rage, as some would put it, against the dying of the light of privacy and internet freedom? This contest for our future has only just begun, but it will become an increasingly central struggle in the social and political discourse within and between nations. The hope is that the history in these pages will help inform that debate.